The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Hugh Bennett from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. Our cover story this week, JOCO's Next Chapter. Small towns in southwest Johnston County are ready to join Triangle's growth. Before the cover story, though, we'll go to the biz section. Biz is written by the TBJ's managing editor, Dane Huffman. In Triangle, luxury home prices leap. A surge in prices for luxury homes in Raleigh and beyond is reaching new levels as cash-rich buyers are willing to pay what had been unheard-of prices. Home values across the Triangle have steadily risen as the market has gained national exposure. But the price, especially in the most desirable areas, is escalating. In 2020, according to TBJ Research, only four homes in the market sold for more than $3 million. In 2021, that number was six. By 2023, a total of 37 homes in the market sold for more than $3 million. Now, a home being built at 1208 Barcroft Place in North Ridge is priced at $9.5 million. It all started during the pandemic, listing agent Steve Wall said. People from high-tax states like California, New York, and Connecticut, for the first time they didn't have to go into an office building to work. They could work remote. Wall said the home, which is 9,587 square feet, is being built by Raleigh Custom Homes and will be part of the Triangle Parade of Homes in the fall. Wall focuses on the luxury market and also had two recent sales for $7 million in Northridge that never hit the listing service. What's driving the highest prices is the deep wealth of many buyers. He said some buyers might stretch for a $3 million home in a great location. But beyond $3 million, that isn't the case. Wall said he was involved in 56 home transactions last year and only 11 of those involved a mortgage. It's different levels of money, Wall said. Typically, you see the people who have money like the hockey players. They're in a certain range, but now I'm getting calls from a whole different range. A $10 million house, they look at that like you look at a $200 expenditure. The Umstead ranked number one in North Carolina. The Umstead Hotel and Spa in Cary is once again the top-ranked stay among North Carolina hotels in U.S. News & World Report's annual rankings released February 10th. The Umstead beat the Ballantine in Charlotte and the Inn on Biltmore Estate in Asheville for the top spot. But the elite destination fell more than 40 spots nationally to 115th. The Farrington House in Pittsburgh ranked number 7 in the state, and the Washington Duke Inn and Golf Club in Durham ranked number 10. Other hotels in the top 10 for North Carolina are the Ritz-Carlton in Charlotte, number 4, Old Edwards Inn and Spa in Highlands, number 5, J.W. Marriott in Charlotte, number 6, the Ivy's Hotel in Charlotte, number 8, and the Flatiron Hotel in Asheville, number 9. As passengers drop, RDU loses a Calgary flight. Canadian carrier WestJet is ending Raleigh-Durham International Airport service to Calgary, citing a notable decline in transborder travel demand. We see no indication that the trend will change in the foreseeable future and have made further reductions to our transborder network in 2026, including the suspension of service between Calgary and Raleigh-Durham, a spokesperson said in an email. WestJet, which launched its nonstop flight between Calgary and RDU in June, has reduced its four-year transborder flying by close to 10%, according to the spokesperson. The cuts come amid tensions between the U.S. and Canada over trade policy and Canadian tourism to the U.S., which has dropped markedly during President Donald Trump's second term in office. In Millbrook Road, a new project is planned. A mixed-use development is proposed for a busy retail corridor in northwest Raleigh. A site plan has been filed for a parcel along Millbrook Road near Glenwood Avenue. The proposal is for a two-story building with retail on the first floor and apartments above. No developer was listed. The building would be on 1.43 acres at 3401 West Millbrook Road, adjacent to Discount Tire and the MAA Crabtree Apartments. Site plans show the building would be 22,100 square feet. There would be a 3,112 square foot space for a restaurant and 7,132 square feet for retail and office space. And in banking, J.P. Morgan names new leader for the Triangle market. A banking giant that's looking to expand its presence in the Triangle has a new local leader. Mary Pearson, local market director for J.P. Morgan Chase, is retired. Roshanak Francia will now oversee the western end of the market, areas such as Durham, Pittsboro, Apex, and Cary. Mary Joyce Keaton will continue to lead the eastern stretch from Raleigh to Selma and Greenville. The leadership shuffle comes as J.P. Morgan continues to add branches in the Triangle. We'll turn now to this week's cover story, JOCO's next chapter. Vulcan Elements' new plant sparks growth plans for southwest Johnston County. It's their turn now. And this week's cover story is written by Ben Tobin. Loretta Byrd has seen the ups and downs of southwest Johnston County for decades. Byrd, a Benson native and CEO of the Benson Area Chamber of Commerce, said the small town was booming when she grew up there in the 50s and 60s. Stores along Main Street were packed, and local businesses served as social anchors for the community. But as Crabtree Valley Mall opened in Raleigh in 1972, and big box retailers proliferated across the region, Benson, like many small towns, felt the pull of growth elsewhere. Local retail hollowed out, foot traffic declined, and the town entered a long period of stagnation. Now, Byrd said, Benson finds itself at another inflection point, one driven in part by major industrial investment into a part of Johnston County that has been overlooked. That includes a planned $918 million rare earth magnet plant by Vulcan Elements, which has helped refocus attention on southwest Johnston County as a place to live, work, and invest. Southwest Johnston County is no longer just on the map, Byrd said. We are the anchor of the new American supply chain with the arrival of Vulcan Elements. We are where the Triangle's future is being built. Johnston County's population increased by roughly 48% to about 250,000 residents from 2010 to 2024. Much of that growth, however, has been concentrated in the corridor of the county connected to Wake County by Interstate 42 and Business Highway 70, such as the towns of Clayton, Smithfield, and Selma. By comparison, southwest Johnston County has watched much of that expansion happen from a distance, often lacking the infrastructure, workforce pipeline, or private investment needed to capture the same momentum. Now, southwest Johnston County is emerging as the next frontier for growth, local leaders say. That shift is being driven by major industrial investments, renewed attention to workforce development, and long overdue regional conversations around infrastructure. As development pressure pushes farther south and west, communities such as Benson and Four Oaks are working to capture new investment while preserving the small-town character that leaders say sets the region apart. That shift is already catching the attention of regional leaders. If I had enough money to invest in real estate, I'd be buying every piece of property I could find out there, said Vern Lindquist, president of Johnston Community College. The town of Four Oaks is a 10-minute drive north on U.S. 301 from Benson, has fewer than 2,700 residents, making it one of the smallest municipalities in Johnston County. That makes its recent growth all the more striking. Four Oaks is now the county's second fastest growing municipality, according to a Triangle Business Journal analysis of population data. Between 2020 and 2024, the town's population grew by roughly 18.5%, outpacing Johnston County's overall growth rate of 15.7%. Only Clayton, which grew by 18.9% over the same period, expanded faster. And Four Oaks, chartered in 1899, may only be getting started. Four Oaks has emerged as a center of gravity for workforce development in southwest Johnston County, anchored by a major investment in training infrastructure designed to meet the needs of advanced manufacturers located in the region. Johnston Community College opened its $40 million advanced manufacturing training facility in September at 546 Boyette Road. The 67,000 square foot facility trains workers in welding, engineering, and machining, skills increasingly in demand by employers locating or expanding in the region, including Vulcan Elements. Everybody in economic development knows probably the first question that every interested industry has is, what about my workforce? Where do I go get them? How trained are they going to be? Said Harold Keene, chairman of the I-95-I-40 Crossroads of America Economic Development Alliance. So we started with that effort when forming the alliance in late 2020, he said. Formed between the city of Dunn in eastern Harnett County and the towns of Benson and Four Oaks in Johnston County, the alliance is designed to supplement rather than replace existing county economic development efforts, Keene said. He added that it is rare for three municipalities to formally collaborate on economic development, but that the multiplying effect of a regional approach is key to the area's long-term growth and competitiveness. For long-standing employers in the region, the focus on workforce training is a welcome sight. Food product supplier House Autry Mills, which moved its North Carolina operations from Newton Grove in Sampson County to Four Oaks in 2001, has expanded significantly since relocating, growing alongside the town itself. Derek Marconi, president and chief financial officer of House Autry Mills, said the company is about four times larger than when it first arrived in Four Oaks, expanding its facility by roughly 30,000 square feet in 2013. With operations spread across 28 acres, Marconi said there's room to grow further. The Advanced Manufacturing Training Center will certainly help support talent development for businesses like House Autry, Marconi said. People and businesses are going to be attracted to areas where they can live, work, and enjoy the community. Infrastructure challenges are ahead. As with many rural municipalities and counties on the outer edges of the Research Triangle, water capacity has emerged as a central constraint on growth in southwest Johnston County. In order to truly support growth in the area, government officials need to work together on building up the necessary water and sewer infrastructure, Marconi said. Benson illustrates the challenge. While the town operates its own wastewater treatment plant, it does not have its own water treatment facility. Instead, Benson primarily purchases water from Dunn in Harnett County. That arrangement has been sufficient to support Benson's current population and development levels, but it could become a limiting factor as the town competes for larger industrial and commercial projects that demand substantial water capacity. Vulcan Elements is going to use more electricity than anything, said Byrd of the Benson Area Chamber of Commerce. So I don't think that we could have handled an industry like Novo Nordisk or Grifols Therapeutics because they do use so much water. Both Novo Nordisk and Grifols Therapeutics operate large manufacturing campuses in Clayton, underscoring the role that water infrastructure plays in shaping where major employers ultimately land. Expanding water capacity is a top priority for elected officials across Johnston County. Patrick Harris, chairman of the Johnston County Board of Commissioners, said one option under consideration is the Lower Neuse Water Supply Program, which would involve constructing a new water treatment plant in the eastern part of the county. According to a presentation to the board in June 2025, the project carries an estimated price tag of more than $700 million. We have to be very careful in what we commit to because we don't want Aunt Sally's water bill to go through the roof to try to fund a project, Harris said. The multifaceted approach is probably the best one, buying time through additional water agreements while working toward a long-term solution. There's been a lot of meaningful work and good conversations around the table to try to move this approach forward from a regional approach. The next Clayton? When he moved to Johnston County in 2022, Lindquist, the president of Johnston Community College, said he spent weeks driving everywhere around the county in search of his next home. He ultimately settled in Clayton, though he drove through Benson during that search. He recalled thinking at the time that the small town didn't appear to have much development momentum. I guess I was wrong, Lindquist says with a laugh. If Vulcan Elements is going to add 1,000 jobs in the next couple of years and they're already talking about doubling the size of the facility, I think it's inescapable that Benson is going to double in size before you know it, he said. A lot of little places that have been what they've been for a long time are going to change quickly in ways that I don't think we can quite imagine. Vincent currently has a population of roughly 4,000 residents. Even with significant growth ahead, it's unlikely to rival Clayton scale anytime soon, said Keene with the I-95-I-40 Crossroads of America Economic Development Alliance. My gut feeling is that Clayton is way ahead and going to continue to be way ahead in Johnston County simply because of its location, Keene said. Is Benson going to have growth? Absolutely. It already is, and it's going to continue. For Byrd, the recent momentum represents a payoff after years of waiting. Shortly before Vulcan Elements announced its massive plans for Benson in November, Byrd said she had been pressing town leaders and the I-95-I-40 Crossroads of America Economic Development Alliance for a major economic development win. I told them we need to get in on the action. We need movement, Byrd said. According to Byrd, Benson Mayor Max Rayner told her that something was in the works. Be patient, she recalled him saying, something is going to happen. We're standing on the verge of getting ready to explode, just like Clayton did, Byrd said. It's just our turn. We got a guest editorial this week from John Hood of the John Locke Foundation. Demographic challenge isn't going away. North Carolina's economy just posted a sizzling 5.6% growth rate, and our headline unemployment rate in December was 3.9%, quite low by historical standards. So why am I not all smiles? Because another important measure is heading in the wrong direction. According to the latest Bureau of Labor Statistics data, the share of working-age people who are either working or looking for a job has been dropping for nearly 4 years. Before the onset of COVID-19 in early 2020, North Carolina's labor force participation had for many years fluctuated between 61% and 61.6%. Another measure, the ratio of employed people to the general population, rose fairly steadily from 57.5% in January 2015 to 59.2% in January 2020. Then came the pandemic. Employment crashed for several months, then bounced back in 2021, and then started declining again in 2022. As of December, just 59.2% of North Carolinians over 16 are in the labor force. The employment-to-population ratio is 56.9%, and both cases were below the national average. In part, these trends reflect the aging of our population. We're living longer than before, and in particular living longer after retirement than previous generations did. On the other end of the pipeline, our rates of family formation and fertility are lower than they used to be. Everything else being equal, the ratio of workers to retirees must shrink. Why care about that? Because retirees rely on those still in the labor market to supply their needs, either directly because they're being cared for by children or other relatives, or indirectly because workers pay taxes into Medicare and Social Security, staff the companies from which retirees earn investment returns, and produce the goods and services that retirees consume. Again, everything else being equal, a smaller number of workers supporting a larger number of retirees might end in economic or political catastrophe. All things are not, however, equal. There are ways out of this doom cycle. One is immigration. Importing working-age people expands the base of the pyramid, at least for a time, and perhaps for longer than that if they have persistently higher fertility rates than native-born citizens. Another is innovation. If we organize workers more efficiently or make them more productive through training and technology or supplement their labor with robotics and artificial intelligence, they may well be able to generate enough economic value, not just to support non-working adults and children, but to continue to raise their standard of living over time. Finally, we can try to change the parameters of the scenario directly. That is, we can induce more young people to marry and have children and induce more older people to work full or part-time long past the standard retirement age. On this quiz, my answer is all of the above. And yet I recognize that reforming immigration is politically challenging. Expanding automation and AI are becoming so, and there may be limits to how much government can or should influence private decisions about fertility and retirement. There are no easy answers, and the longer we wait, the harder they'll get. John Hood is a member of the John Locke Foundation. He can be reached at jhood@johnlocke, that's J-O-H-N-L-O-C-K-E.org. We've got time for some of the reporter pages this week. We'll start with Real Estate and Development, which is brought to us by Kaylee Thompson. Chartwell invests in Durham Center. Following the success of its redevelopment of the former Martin Marietta headquarters, a Raleigh developer is looking for a repeat win in Durham. Chartwell Property Group, in partnership with Capital Associates, is redeveloping the 15-story Durham Center downtown. Chartwell is investing $10 million in upgrades to the 200,500-square-foot building, a similar strategy the company employed with The Grove Raleigh. Landlords have been pouring millions of dollars into upgrading their triangle office buildings with the latest amenities to attract big leases as part of the flight-to-quality trend reshaping the market. As we were developing The Grove Raleigh, we realized that it was a great way to breathe new life into an older asset, and we started looking at it for Durham. Then as The Grove proved itself out from both a leasing standpoint and from functionality, how it actually improved the workplace environment, we really put our head down for the Durham Center, Jack Dunn, Managing Director for Chartwell Property Group, said. There will be 20,000 square feet of amenities, including an indoor pickleball court, golf simulator, fitness facility with yoga, infrared saunas and cold plunges, library, game room and cafe, event venue, conference room, Wi-Fi-enabled outdoor workspaces, glass, solarium and lounge, 15th floor sky bar, and collaboration space. The 15th floor will also have a recharge room with a meditation pod and zero-gravity massage chair. The building will be rebranded as The Grove Durham. Construction started in December with a goal to finish in July. The building is 86% leased, according to Capital Associates, which handles leasing. Tenants include Duke Clinical Research Institute, Duke Health Development and Alumni Affairs, and the Durham Chamber of Commerce. Kane Realty enters downtown Cary market. Kane Realty Corp. is expanding into downtown Cary with plans for a mid-rise apartment building. The Raleigh developer filed site plans with the town for Flatiron, a mixed-use project on Chatham Street. Flatiron will be a seven-story building with apartments and a restaurant space. Flatiron is proposed for 2 acres at 602 West Chatham Street and 523 Old Apex Road. The property is now unpaved parking next to the Chatham Street roundabout. A small warehouse would be demolished. The project is significant for Kane as it adds to the explosive growth happening in downtown Cary, an area the developer has not yet been involved with. Site plans show there will be 213 units, 5,659 square feet of restaurant and retail space, and an 8-level attached parking deck. The spread of bedroom layouts will be 16 studios, 110 one-bedrooms, 71 two-bedrooms, and 15 three-bedrooms and one hotel unit. Federal Capital sells 4540 building. A Maryland-based real estate investment company is selling more triangle assets. Federal Capital Partners sold the 4540 office building on the edge of Research Triangle Park for $45.5 million to a joint ownership between DRA Advisors of New York City and Raleigh-based Edgewater Ventures. The five-story building is just south of the 4540 interchange. The sale comes weeks after Federal Capital sold apartments and office buildings in Midtown Raleigh to Kane Realty Corp. for more than $70 million. DRA Advisors did not return multiple requests for comment. The firm recently bought the Hawthorne at the Parkway Apartments in Cary for $60.85 million. 4542 is 94.6% leased. And in Midtown Raleigh, luxury townhomes are planned near Wegmans. Million-dollar townhomes with elevators and rooftop decks are planned inside the Beltline in Raleigh. Jeremy Spivey and Mick Michael with CCCRE Holdings, LLC, are partnering to build Enclave at Drury Hills off Six Forks Road in Midtown near Wegmans and Trader Joe's. The infill development will have 8 townhomes starting at $1.2 million. Michael said they hope to start construction in the third quarter with delivery by second quarter 2027. 6 units will be 2,600 square feet and start at $1.2 million. 2 end units will be 3,200 square feet and start at $1.6 million. The three-story townhomes will have rooftop decks with elevators running from the two-car garage. Homes will have three bedrooms, three and a half baths, a study, kitchen island, and scullery. The third bedroom is optional. Townhomes and condominiums with elevators and rooftop spaces have become popular inside the Beltline. Wilson Blunt is building 27 townhome-style condos with elevators and rooftop terraces on Oberlin Road. Legacy Custom Homes is building $22 million condos near JC Park. Oberlin Heights has 11 townhomes priced at $1.2 million with rooftop patios and optional elevators. Ben Tobin brings us the Greater Triangle section. His main story this week, rezoning filed for Wilson Apartments. A Charlotte area developer has submitted a rezoning request for a multifamily development on 10.33 acres at 1147 Stantonsburg Circle Southeast in Wilson. Gill Development LLC is seeking approval from the Wilson City Council, which is slated to vote on the rezoning during a March 19th meeting. According to the application, the property was rezoned 3 years ago as a residential mixed-use conditional district by a different developer. The purpose of the new rezoning is to change the conditional district portion to match our site plan, the developer said in the application. The rezoning will help bring more quality rental housing to the city of Wilson and help address the citywide housing shortage, the application says. A site plan shows 18 apartment buildings and a clubhouse on the vacant property. Winston-Salem-based Steel Group Architects drew up the site plan. The proposed site is a couple miles southeast of downtown Wilson, which is undergoing a major revitalization push centered around a new baseball stadium. The Wilson Warbirds, a minor league affiliate of the Milwaukee Brewers, are set to debut at the $64 million stadium in April. NSV Development, the company behind the public-private investment for the stadium and ancillary development, is planning to invest $200 million to $400 million in the area. Outside of downtown, major employers are pouring billions of dollars in investments. The largest of those is Janssen Biotech, a subsidiary of pharmaceutical giant Johnson & Johnson. Last month, the company announced an additional multi-billion dollar investment in a second drug product manufacturing facility that will create up to 500 jobs. This follows the company beginning construction on a $2 billion biologics manufacturing facility in Wilson last year. In Franklin County, Murphy Oil buys Youngsville tract for $3 million. Murphy Oil USA purchased a 3.35 acres near the intersection of US 1 and NC 96 in Youngsville for a little more than $3 million last week, according to Franklin County deed records. The seller is Holmes Oil Company, Incorporated, founded and led by Chapel Hill-based businessman Edward Holmes. Representatives of Murphy Oil USA did not respond to requests seeking comment. Murphy Oil USA, which spun off from Murphy Oil in 2013, has over 1,700 fueling locations across 27 states. Many Murphy Oil USA gas stations are located at Walmart stores. Franklin County had a growth rate of 3.5% year over year from 2023 to 2024, trailing only Brunswick County as the fastest growing county in North Carolina, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. In Moore County, Retson snaps up 2.8-acre site in Southern Pines. Retson COS, C-O-S, purchased 2.8 acres in Southern Pines for $1.1 million, according to Moore County deed records. The land, located between Southwest Broad Street and Old U.S. Highway 1, was sold by Pinehurst-based T&S developers last month. Representatives of Retson Companies did not respond to requests seeking comment about plans for the property. The site is zoned for commercial use, sits adjacent to restaurants and retail shops, and is less than a mile from downtown Southern Pines. Retson, founded in 2002 and led by CEO Brian Clodfelter, partners with national brands and local businesses. The firm has worked with Dunkin', Bojangles, Advance Auto Parts, and Sherwin-Williams, according to its website. The property sits next to 195 American Fusion Cuisine and Legends Bar and Grill. Southern Pines has grown considerably, attracting younger families. The town's population is now approaching 20,000. And finally, in Lee County, 1,200 home project takes shape in Sanford. Toronto-based Matami Homes has submitted plans for the first phase of its Vermilion neighborhood, which will have more than 1,200 homes at full build-out and one of Lee County's largest subdivisions ever. The Sanford City Council voted in August to approve annexation and rezoning of a 488-acre site near the intersection of Colon and Riddle Roads northeast of town. Pod 1A will consist of 193 units on 81 acres, according to the plan submitted to the Sanford-Lee County Broadway Technical Review Committee. This phase includes 123 single-family homes and 70 townhomes, which will occupy average lot sizes of 7,500 square feet and 2,000 square feet, respectively. Bob Wiggins, Raleigh Division President for Matami Homes, declined to share estimated home prices, but said the community will serve the entry-level and move-up buyer segments. "We hope to break ground this spring and be open for sales in late spring of 2027," Wiggins said. "Pricing will be published at the time." The median sales price for single-family homes in Lee County in December was $300,000, according to Dorify MLS, a drop of more than 13% from December of 2024. Sanford's population is a little more than 32,000, according to U.S. Census Bureau estimates. Reporter Zach Ezone brings us the news from the healthcare and life sciences world. Priovant advances drug for rare skin disease. A biotech firm in Durham, backed by drug giant Pfizer, is advancing what could become a multi-billion dollar treatment for rare diseases. Priovant Therapeutics said its lead drug, an oral therapy called brepocitinib, succeeded in a phase 2 study focused on cutaneous sarcoidosis, a skin disease that affects about 40,000 adults in the United States. The results follow Priovant's announcement last year of positive phase 3 results in a trial focused on dermatomyositis, a rare inflammatory condition that causes muscle weakness and severe skin rash, affecting about 50,000 adults in the U.S. The company confirmed February 6th it has filed a new drug application with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration seeking regulatory approval of brepocitinib as a treatment for dermatomyositis. Pharmaceutical intelligence firm Evaluate has projected brepocitinib could generate $2.3 billion in annual sales by 2032, ranking it among the 10 biggest potential drug launches this year. Priovant, formed in 2021 through a partnership between Roivant Sciences and Pfizer, it focuses on developing new treatments for rare autoimmune diseases with high morbidity and few existing treatments. The company was formed around brepocitinib, which was previously under development at Pfizer. As of September, Priovant had about 80 employees, with fewer than half based in the Triangle, including the chief development officer and much of its development team. Another Roivant company, Immunovant, has an office in Durham. The phase 2 study for cutaneous sarcoidosis enrolled 31 patients across 15 sites in the U.S. Priovant, in a statement, said patients who received the highest dose, 45 milligrams, achieved meaningful clinical improvement compared to placebo, including 100% response rates on multiple endpoints. Cutaneous sarcoidosis is an inflammatory disease that can cause chronic lesions. There are no approved therapies. "This drug has done everything we could have asked of it in this study," Roivant CEO Matt Glein said during an earnings call on February 6th. Also in the drug world, drug makers are pouring billions into NC expansions. North Carolina continues to attract interest from global drug makers looking to accelerate investments in the U.S., with companies announcing nearly $4 billion in new or expanding facilities statewide last year. These investments continue a string of high-profile announcements for the state that could result in thousands of jobs in the coming years. Collectively, North Carolina last year landed 18 major life sciences projects, totaling about $3.8 billion worth of investments, according to the North Carolina Biotechnology Center. The projects, if fully realized, could create 13,180 jobs. Still, the level of investment is a step back from the record set in 2024, when North Carolina saw more than $10 billion worth of announced projects, a figure boosted by Novo Nordisk's $4 billion expansion in Johnston County. The industry is already seeing some momentum. Genentech in January announced it was increasing its investment in Holly Springs from $700 million to $2 billion. Vanguard Utility, a subsidiary of Apogect Holdings, plans to invest $70 million in an Apex facility to produce generic injectable medicines. Doug Edgerton, president of the NC Biotechnology Center, said he is optimistic based on the number of potential projects. NC State builds stronger ties to defense funding. NC State University has gained access to a massive defense program, positioning the school to perform work under a $151 billion federal contract. The university has been accepted for work on the Missile Defense Agency's Scalable Homeland Innovative Enterprise Layered Defense, and that is acronym SHIELD, a 10-year contract vehicle through the Department of Defense. The contract supports the Golden Dome vision of the nation's missile defense strategy. Details on the university's involvement are limited. NC State, in an announcement February 5th, said, "The contract encompasses a broad range of work areas that allows for the rapid delivery of innovative capabilities to the warfighter with increased speed and agility," end quote. The Federal Department in December announced the Missile Defense Agency made 1,014 awards under the long-term contract in its initial tranche of awards. The agency announced another 1,086 awards in December and 340 awards in mid-January. NC State recorded $49.3 million in research and development expenditures financed by the Department of Defense in fiscal year 2024, according to the National Science Foundation. We turn now to the world of retail and restaurants. This report brought to us by Kate Tracy. Local shop seeks bankruptcy relief. A Triangle ice cream shop with a strong following has filed for bankruptcy with more than $1 million in debt. Mama Bird's Ice Cream, with locations in Holly Springs and Apex, plus nearly 30,000 Instagram followers, filed for Chapter 11 reorganization on January 20th in the Eastern District of North Carolina. It reported between $100,001 and $500,000 in assets and $1.04 million in liabilities, the filing shows. Lori Biggs, an attorney with Biggs Law Firm PLLC representing Mama Bird's in bankruptcy court, said the combination of a Small Business Administration loan and various merchant capital loans led to the business seeking bankruptcy protection. "They don't expect to see changes in their operations," Biggs said. "The merchant capital loans are usually never a good idea." Owner Leslie Richmond did not return requests for comment. The bankruptcy filing names the SBA as a creditor, owed $137,000. Local small businesses have had SBA loans with variable interest rates that have spiked over the past 2 years, leading to multiple bankruptcies. Mama Bird's owes thousands to out-of-state lending companies, including $38,798 to Fort Lauderdale-based iBusiness Funding, $29,568 to Philadelphia-based Best Egg, and $28,943 to San Francisco-based Lending Club. Some lending terms allowed lenders to take money from Mama Bird's daily or weekly, Biggs said. Local lenders Thread Capital and Carolina Community Impact are owed $27,784 and $78,668, respectively. Coastal Federal Credit Union is owed $114,810. The shop's revenue was $404,555 in 2025, down from $490,773 in 2024. Last August, a freezer malfunction resulted in $13,000 in lost property. Richmond started planning her permanent shop in 2015 in Holly Springs after operating a mobile ice cream and cookie cart. Stewart joins forces with national PE-backed firm. A 32-year-old Raleigh firm has joined forces with a national company based in Pennsylvania and backed by private equity. Stewart, a design, engineering, surveying, and planning company, has been acquired by Stratus Team, the company has announced. The price was not disclosed. Willie Stewart, a native of Columbia, started Stewart in 1994 and has grown the firm throughout the region. In addition to Raleigh, the firm has offices in Wilmington, Greensboro, Charlotte, Durham, and Columbia, South Carolina. We believe it is a privilege to design spaces that positively impact people's lives, and Stratus aligns with that belief. The opportunity preserves our culture while strengthening how we serve communities, Stewart said in a release. Stewart, who is now listed as chairman on his firm's website, was the recipient of a Triangle Business Journal CEO of the Year Award in 2021. Nick Ellis is now president and CEO. He was formerly chief operating officer. The acquisition brings approximately 140 Stewart employees over to Stratus. As of last year, Stewart had approximately 135 employees, according to TBJ Research. Stratus, an architecture, engineering, and consulting firm based in the Pittsburgh area, has offices across the country, including one in Raleigh. Brandon Enix, CEO of Stratus, said in a release that Stewart's reputation for technical excellence, client service, and community impact aligns perfectly with Stratus's vision. And finally, in retail and restaurants, Lifetime opens its fourth Triangle location. Lifetime's newest luxury fitness center at Alston Town Center off Highway 55 brings the total number of Lifetime clubs in the Triangle to four. The $50 million project in Cary, located at 1120 Healthy Way near Highway 540, wrapped up 2 months ahead of schedule. Brassfield and Gorey was the general contractor on the 93,000-square-foot project. Outside, palm trees surround Lifetime's resort-style lap and leisure pool, complete with a slide, a bistro bar serving alcoholic beverages, and cabanas available for reservation. Six pickleball courts are located by the pool. Inside, the club features two indoor lap pools, a large kids' area with a gymnasium and classrooms, and a full-service spa with hair, nail, and massage treatments. The club features a cafe and separate co-working area. Other amenities include locker rooms, saunas, cold plunge pools, and steam rooms. The second level features cardio and resistance machines, free weights, squat racks, hydro massage chairs, and a recovery center. There are also three indoor pickleball courts and enclosed studios for fitness classes. Monthly memberships cost $249 per person or $369 for two, higher than Lifetime's other Cary Club off Regency Parkway, where memberships are $199 per month or $299 for two people. This week's executive voice feature focuses on Catherine Peel. She's the chief practice officer of architecture firm LS3P. Kate Tracy interviewed Ms. Peel. Catherine Peel is coming up on four decades as an architect. She's currently the chief practice officer at LS3P, the largest architecture firm in North Carolina, ranked by number of registered architects, according to TBJ Research. As she approaches retirement, she's focused on not only leading LS3P, which is based in Charleston, South Carolina, through its major projects in the Triangle, but also her own leadership transition. I feel like I'm jumping off a cliff a little bit because when you've been doing what I've been doing for so long, coming up 38 years, it's a little daunting, Peel said. She joined Boney Architects in 1988 before it merged with LS3P in 2005. The fact that I started out as an intern and I got to be in the position I'm in today, I think a lot of it is just sticking with it, Peel said. People jump around a lot to different jobs, and I think that loyalty counts for a lot when you're in a place that you have opportunities, which I've been fortunate to have. And the TBJ asks her, in terms of M&A, what's it like to lead an architecture firm in 2026? And I assume that's mergers and acquisitions. We're seeing a ton of that. I think it's a little bit of the silver tsunami of senior partners, particularly in architectural firms, that are looking around and not necessarily having somebody behind them interested in buying them out or being able to afford to. That's why you see a lot of these, particularly in the Triangle, a lot of these big firms that are getting snatched up by more national or international companies. It's just the buyout more than anything else. I think that you're maybe losing a little of the local connection. We're competing with a lot of national firms right now, and fortunately still winning work. We just feel it's really, really important to be rooted in our communities. What are your biggest projects in the Triangle right now? The DHHS headquarters, Phase 1, just recently opened. Hopefully there will be a Phase 2 for that. The North Carolina Education Campus is under construction, and that's a huge project that's been in the works for the last couple of years. We're working on the Lenovo Center with Gensler, which is a multi-phase project and super complicated. What are LS3P's strengths? Being able to be in a lot of diverse markets is what has helped us survive the ups and downs of the economy. The multifamily market has been really slow the last couple of years, and so I think a lot of firms have been just specialized in that. They may have been hit pretty hard. What advice do you give young architects? Raise your hand. Say, I'll do it. I want to learn it. Take responsibility and learning every day. What kind of design does Raleigh need? I'd still love to see our core central business district and Fayetteville Street have more mixed use, more retail, more restaurants. I think we took a big hit during COVID because I think we were moving that way, and then it just feels like everything stopped. What are some projects that make you the most proud? A big one that I was involved in was the NC State, the Wolf Ridge Student Housing Project on a Centennial campus. And that was years of work leading that team, and I'm just really proud of how that project came out. The K through 12 work that I've done, I feel like that's been my biggest legacy here. What hobbies do you have? I play golf with my husband and with some other women. I like to paint, so I do watercolors and acrylics. My biggest hobby right now is planning my daughter's wedding. She's getting married in September. And LS3P has 80 employees in Raleigh. They have $26 million in revenue in their Raleigh office. Ms. Peel, is, as she said, has two daughters, and she's 67 years old. Due to reduced funding, UNC and Duke look to slash some research centers. Zach Ezone is the writer of this story. Duke University and UNC Chapel Hill are combined, closing more than a dozen research centers as the universities grapple with financial challenges. Duke plans to close three of its 27 research centers, while UNC plans to decommission 14 of its 59 centers and institutes. The actions come as both universities pursue budget cuts in response to federal and state funding losses. Duke recently announced it will close the Biodermography of Aging Research Unit and the Center for Advanced Hindsight, hosted by the school's Social Science Research Institute, after the fiscal year. Healthy Eating Research, part of the Duke Global Health Institute, will close once its funding is exhausted in 2027. The Center for Advanced Hindsight is led by Professor Dan Ariely, whose name appears in files related to Jeffrey Epstein, released by the U.S. Department of Justice. A Duke spokesperson told the Duke Chronicle that the two situations are unrelated and that the decision to close the center was finalized in December. Ariely addressed his relationship with Epstein in a recent column published by the Chronicle. While this process has required difficult decisions, the outcomes will enable the university to focus resources on interdisciplinary research communities engaging in the broadest number of faculty and students. Ed Ballison, Senior Vice Provost for Interdisciplinary Programs and Initiatives at Duke, said in a statement, Duke has developed a five-year strategic plan to reach $350 million in annual savings, with most occurring in fiscal year 2026, according to a presentation from administrators during a meeting of the university's Academic Council in late September. The cost-cutting is in response to various pressures affecting Duke's finances, most of which are coming from the federal government. This includes uncertainty around research funding, with the federal government proposing earlier this year a 15% cap on facilities and administrative rates on research grants. Duke estimates that if this cap were implemented, it would lose about $230 million in revenue each year. UNC Chapel Hill. As part of the school's efforts to cut tens of millions in expenses, UNC wants to decommission 14 of its 59 official centers and institutes in order to shave $7 million over several years, according to Board of Trustees meeting documents. So far, UNC has identified six centers to close: the Center for European Studies, the Institute for the Study of the Americas, Carolina Asia Center, African Studies Center, Center for Middle East and Islamic Studies, Center for Slavic, Eurasian, and East European Studies. UNC's Faculty Council on February 2nd passed a resolution supporting the centers and urging university administrators to work with faculty on budget realignments on campus. We urge the administration to immediately pause any actions toward center closures and to engage in transparent collaborative consultation with faculty governance, center directors, faculty staff, students, and other affected stakeholders to develop a sustainable long-term plan for maintaining and strengthening these centers and the activities and scholarship they support, the resolution said. A resolution of the UNC Board of Trustees in January increases the annual savings target to nearly $90 million. Wake Forest Entertainment Venue sold for $25 million. A large sports and entertainment venue in Wake Forest that draws approximately 600,000 visitors annually is under new ownership. An affiliate of North Carolina-based Bluestone Real Estate Investments purchased The Factory, a 210,619-square-foot facility at 1839 South Main Street, for $25 million, according to deed records filed this month. Gary Lyons, who's leading the new ownership group along with Kevin Neshat, said the purchase has a long time coming. They became aware that The Factory was for sale about a year and a half ago, but came in second place on their first attempt to purchase it. When the other deal fell through, Lyons and Neshat landed the property. What's attractive is that it's so close to downtown Wake Forest, and there's been quite a renaissance of downtown Wake Forest, which we appreciate. We see a lot of value creation there, Lyons said. The sellers were the Mac Sydney Company 2 LLC and Philister 2 LLC. The Mac Sydney companies acquired the property in 2015. The factory's buildings date to 1964 and were originally home to a street sweeper manufacturer. Local developer Jeff Ammons created a sports and entertainment venue in the 1990s. The total assessed value of the property is $25.33 million, according to Wake County Records. Wake Forest is growing rapidly, with a population that has ballooned to well over 60,000, made up mostly of younger families and professionals. The factory is 99.75% occupied, with 23 tenants, including Brookfield's Indoor Golf and Lounge, Rage Room, iSmash Wake Forest, and Battle House Laser Tag. Polar Ice Wake Forest, which has two NHL regulation ice rinks, is one of the anchor tenants, occupying approximately 95,000 square feet. From all our research, it would appear there's a large demand for ice time. Most of the complexes in the area stay full and are open long hours most every day, so that certainly was affirming for us, Lyons said. York Properties of Raleigh handles leasing for the factory. The six outdoor baseball fields across Grand Mark Street were also part of the 35-acre sale. In addition to its sports and entertainment offerings, the factory has food and beverage options, including Two Roosters Ice Cream, Gonzo Tacos and Tequila, and Village Deli and Grill. Lyons, who now lives in Greenville, South Carolina, previously lived in Wake Forest. Neshat has spent countless hours at the factory as his son played hockey at Polar Ice. Now, here we are ready to hopefully take it to the next level, Lyons said. And that story was brought to us by Kate Tracy. We've got time for at least part of the transportation and development page, brought to us by Lauren Onosorge. New home found for Accelerator. An organization that supports entrepreneurs is rebounding after its $1.7 million federal contract was canceled last year amid sweeping Trump administration cuts. RIOT's contract as a regional innovation cluster was canceled without explanation, the organization said at the time. But Tom Snyder, RIOT's executive director, got creative. The organization and initiative of the Wireless Research Center in Wake Forest continued its legacy accelerator programs and kickstarted conversations, including with Tom Rue, president and CEO of NC IDEA, a private foundation that also supports entrepreneurship. NC IDEA and the Wireless Research Center formed a joint venture, transferring the RIOT Accelerator Program and its entrepreneurial programming to NC IDEA. Snyder is careful to say the Doge cut didn't prompt the move, but under NC IDEA's umbrella, it's a stronger organization. They were our number one funded ecosystem partner, Rue said. We saw a demand for the services they provided from the people we serve. Together, the organizations can pursue more ambitious projects, Rue said. He points to RIOT's successful accelerator programming, which helps entrepreneurs hammer concepts into companies. If we just bring this in-house, we have a stronger position to continue those services and do more and grow more, as it grow it more as a practice area for NC IDEA, he said. The new arrangement has NC IDEA assuming operational expenses. It's taken two RIOT employees, including Snyder and Rachel Newberry, onto its payroll. In an emailed statement, Jerry Hayes, founder of the Wireless Research Center, said the move ensured that RIOT continues to scale its impact with a mission-aligned partner. International carriers expand service at RDU. Two international carriers are adding flights at Raleigh-Durham International Airport this summer. Iceland Air and Aeromexico are increasing frequencies on existing routes. Iceland Air debuted its nonstop to Iceland in 2022. Aeromexico launched nonstop service to Cancun last year. Iceland Air's nonstop flight from RDU to Reykjavik currently operates four times weekly. Starting March 1st, Sundays will be added. On May 18th, the service becomes daily. The market is performing well, and we see demand for additional flights, a spokesperson said in an email. Last year, the flight boarded more than 41,000 passengers, compared to just under 40,000 in 2024. In manufacturing, Wake County pursues potential $11 billion pipeline. For Michael Haley, executive director of Wake County Economic Development, 2026 started with a bang, an announcement from Swiss biotech firm Genentech that it would double its investment in the region by pouring $2 billion into its Holly Springs manufacturing operations. Haley is confident more economic wins are ahead. These companies are finding they're making an initial announcement, and they're doubling down before they can even finish their construction, Haley said. Wake County's pipeline includes 52 projects worth more than $11 billion in potential investment and 11,000 jobs, Haley said. Life sciences and advanced manufacturing dominate that list. 12 projects target Raleigh, according to Kyle Touchstone, director of Raleigh Economic Development. Several are advanced manufacturing. The 12 represent more than $860 million in potential investment. In some numbers this week, the largest commercial real estate leases in the Triangle, number one, Humacite, number two, Smith Anderson, number three, Aspida Financial Services, number four, Pendo.io, Inc., and number five, CapTrust. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Again, I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.